The year ahead will be dominated by politics, and Florida plays a central role. Welcome to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Today, looking at the year ahead, 2020. We're just 3.5 months away from the state's presidential primary, and the battle for the state's winner-take-all electoral votes is coming up in November. This year also marks a decade since the devastating earthquake in Haiti, and the turmoil and economic collapse continues in Venezuela. Plus, tackling choked roads and escalating housing costs, just some of the other big challenges that certainly will make headlines in 2020. We're going to talk about the year ahead coming up today on the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. It's made possible by Willie the Bee Man, Bee Removal Specialist. This is the South Florida Roundup here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Happy New Year. Thanks for listening. We're looking ahead to 2020, the year that could be, and it certainly will be a big year for politics, and that means that Florida is going to be in the spotlight again. We have got our editorial page editors from South Florida's major news organizations back with us this week. Nancy Ankrum with our news partner, the Miami Herald. Rosemary O'Hara with the South Florida Sun Sentinel, and Rick Christie with the Palm Beach Post. All three of you, Happy New Year. Are you steeled up, ready for what 2020 is to bring when it comes to politics in South Florida, Nancy?
I'm energized. I also
rested and ready.
I may be lying.
Yes, I think the loins have been girded. Yes, I think we're fine.
Obviously, a crucial election year, big election year. Impeachments in the air, certainly.
Yes.
Lots of Democratic candidates. Cries of socialism in some cases on the Democratic side. Cries of socialism from the Republicans that we're hearing, and questions about the counting of votes. No doubt are going to be with us in October and November. Rosemary, how is this shaping up for Florida?
Well, it all comes down to Florida, Florida, Florida. There are, for those of us who've been here for a long time, we start thinking, well, you know, Florida's really tipping red. I mean, when you look at statewide races, they're mostly Republicans have dominated Tallahassee. But then you got to remind yourself, well, you know, Barack Obama won Florida 2 times.
Yep.
And all statewide races are determined by about 1% of votes, or less than 1%. 2 statewide races in 2016 had to be recounted. So I think the nation's the focus is going to be on Florida and again this time.
Yeah, it's a winner-take-all. 29 electoral votes certainly are in play. But before we get to November, we got to get through March and the Democratic presidential preference primary. Florida being so important, obviously, in this cycle for the Democrats, they began their debate calendar in June of last year here in South Florida. As the field is narrowing to some degree, Nancy, what are the messages that the Democratic candidates are using to resonate with Florida voters, do you think?
Oh, well, they have made a huge step to the left. Some of them have. Some of them have in terms of free tuition and Medicare for all. The degree to which that is resonating outside of South Florida remains to be seen. As it is branded socialism, however, that too will probably resonate to the North. You know, I think that the Democratic Party, we have seen that big tent. Everyone has a voice, which I think at this point is going to be to the Democratic Party's detriment. I think they need to be more Republican here, strong-arm some people out of this race so that people, really, there are still too many people. And I'm not saying who needs to go. I'm not sure who needs to go.
Yeah.
But still, there has been a real lack of focus. The primary is in March, folks.
Right.
And people are distracted. People still are not paying attention. And the Democrats, if they want to have a prayer, need to focus their energies and their support on a pared back slate.
But Rick, when it comes to the primary, it's a closed system, right? It's going to only be the Floridians that are registered with the Democratic Party that are going to select their Democratic preference when it comes to the president. Is the field just too large at this point beyond March? It looks to kind of court those purple voters in Florida that are going to be that 1% difference that Rosemary mentioned?
Yeah, I think I agree with Nancy that the field is really too large. I think for the primary, the Democratic candidates need to realize that that South Florida, Central Florida, North Florida, West Florida, and even Southwest Florida are very different, and that they have to have a message that resonates in all of those areas. Of course, a much more progressive message works in South Florida and everything, but that's not the same message that you would have in West Florida or North Florida, or even Southwest Florida. And I think that the primary candidates need to understand that. As someone I think called a long time ago, what was the six states of Florida or something like that? and they need to recognize that they need to have a message that cuts across all of those regions. And that's why I kind of think that two things that would do well across all of those areas. One, I think, is healthcare, because healthcare is a huge issue in the state of Florida with regard to the people who are still struggling to afford healthcare in the state of Florida, and the issue we've had with Medicaid expansion and everything. The other issue, I think, and this probably isn't a popular one among my colleagues, but I think the other big one is infrastructure. And if somebody can bring the right message regarding infrastructure to the state of Florida, that they have a good chance of cutting across all of those areas as well. Mm. Because I think that our state just has not done a very good job in terms of basic infrastructure on roads and water and things of that nature.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. Lots of debate around healthcare and
expanding
healthcare. Not so much debate on a national level about sewer systems and water supply.
And President Trump came into office saying he wanted to do something about infrastructure. Mm. It is, without question, a bipartisan issue.
Look at what's happened in Fort Lauderdale just in December with the sewer systems.
No, it's horrible.
And in Dade County with the Olita Water sewer system leak that we saw earlier.
Right. One of the issues that I think about the primary is that with the impeachment underway, that the ability for the Democrats to get out their message is going to be has been drowned out. My other point, just from a personal preference, is that to watch the polls and still see Joe Biden at the top, my suspicion is that he will be in the end who people coalesce around. I think it's concerning to see Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren continue to still be high, in the top field. I fear that us, as Nancy said, people who are seen as socialist the thing Democrats need to focus on is how do they beat Donald Trump? And yeah, we want an answer to health care, and we want to protect Social Security and Medicare, but to nominate a socialist is not a winning solution for beating the president.
But the Democrats have never really had a great response when Republicans label them. I think it is brilliant for Republicans to label some of these candidates socialists. I don't think that even Barack Obama did not have a good pushback in 2012 against hostility toward Obamacare. And that has always been their problem. Marketing, the pithy, snarky pushback that and it's unfortunate that that's what it takes to get our attention, mm-hmm. I think. I also think that if we are going to talk about infrastructure, the smart Democratic candidate will tie infrastructure concerns, our broken infrastructure, to climate change, which is the topic that really will resonate with the young voters who need to come out.
But that's been disappointing that they have not done that.
I think
when they when they came to Miami, I think, for one of the first debates and everything, and all of us, I think, were telling them, you need to talk about climate change. And I think, did they spend any time talking about climate change in that debate?
I believe two of the 20 candidates mentioned climate change at that time, over two nights of debates.
Yeah.
So they're not listening to you, Nancy.
They'll pay for that.
But I do want to ask the Republican Party, to Rosemary's initial point here about how the Republican Party in Florida has been the party of dominance when it comes to state politics, and arguably, while they're nonpartisan at the local level, even kind of in control in local politics in some of the communities in South Florida. Rick, first, a push on the Democrats that we've seen from Andrew Gillum, the Democratic gubernatorial candidate, to register more Democratic voters, register voters, presumably Democratic voters. That has been coming up short. Republican efforts to register voters have been stronger as we move into the 2020 election cycle. Republican turnout has been stronger. Republican passion has been stronger for the candidate. And of course, the bully pulpit that the president has in Palm Beach on the island, in Doral with the resort, and just generally speaking with his ability to grab attention has been nothing short of significant when it comes to encouraging and putting some more wind in the sail of the Florida Republican Party.
Yeah, I think, in terms of Andrew Gillum and what he's trying to do with this Forward Florida thing that he's doing, he had kind of a dry run in Virginia and had some successes there. And I think his hope is that he will repeat the successes that the Democrats had in Virginia, where they flipped the whole state blue, I believe.
In the 2019 election.
In the recent legislative elections. He's hoping to do the same thing here. I think in terms of registering more Democrats, that's for them, that's a great thing that they should be doing. They should always be doing. But as we all know, it still just comes down to turnout.
Turnout, that's
Yep. I mean, the Democrats had more than enough people to vote and win in 2018. They just did not come out and vote.
Right.
And so basically, again, nice for you to get as many people to vote as possible. I believe greatly in that myself, no matter what your party is. But the bottom line in terms of winning a race, if you don't get your voters to turn out, it doesn't mean anything.
It's a lingering memory of 2000. It's a lingering memory of 2016, a lingering memory of 2018.
I give the Republicans credit for being, one, on message, and two, making sure that the bench coming up is on message.
Is it that message resonating more, though, with more and more Floridians to the tune of about 1,000 a day that are moving to the state?
It's possible. I don't know that for
They're
sure.
They're coming from New York.
Yeah.
New Jersey.
Where the taxes
California.
Are.
Right.
But it is
tax refugees.
It is a strong message. And everyone is on point, from the governor all the way down to the first time legislative candidate. The Democratic candidates that we see for the legislature too often are, they're first timers. They're really, really nice. But they are not strong in terms of experience, in terms of, is this the kind of person I want to send to the legislature? I had a really nice talk with the pizza delivery guy who was running as a Democrat. And it was very nice. But that's the problem. I think it's indicative of who the Democrats are, and from the dates from a time when the Big Ten, the we can embrace just about everyone, really was a successful message, really worked for them. But they're a little mired. They need to stiffen that backbone and, I think, crack down a little more, unfortunately.
We're talking about the year to come in 2020. It certainly will be dominated by politics in Florida. Presidential politics will be leading those headlines, and we're talking about what could be the year ahead with Nancy Ankrum with the Miami Herald, Rick Christie with the Palm Beach Post, Rosemary O'Hara with the South Florida Sun Sentinel, each of them the editorial page editors at those media organizations. One of the other kind of lingering memories of 2016 and 2018, Rosemary, will be Broward County votes, will be Palm Beach County votes, Rick Christie, counting mm-hmm. those votes and mm-hmm. counting them again, and in some cases counting them again. What could be the year ahead? The test run of the presidential preference primary in March, but really looking at the November election. Are we ready?
You know, the answer to that is really unknown because there are questions that haven't been answered. We've heard that at least two Florida counties' election systems were interfered with in the last election, and yet they won't tell us which counties those are. We have to take trust that those who are in charge of our elections are right when they tell us, oh, everything's okay. But let's recall, the other thing the Republicans have going for them in this election year is Governor DeSantis. And he was he owes his election to President Trump, who, you know, threw his support wildly behind him. Governor DeSantis, who named the Broward Supervisor of Elections and the Palm Beach Supervisor of Elections. And so we have two Republican election supervisors in two of the most Democratic counties in Florida, and they were not elected, and they are now changing things up and changing the systems. So, you know, there are people who believe who have questions about how this election will be run. The other thing that they're to the governor, he has the bully pulpit in Florida.
Yeah.
He's popular. He's going out and can command the stage. And for the president, that's a huge lift.
Yeah, where some of this all comes together is around the implementation of Amendment 4, both turnout, voter registration, the kinds of folks that will be voting in this election. The Amendment 4, of course, the restoration of rights of felons in Florida, which the governor has fought that automation, that automatic restoration. Could that play out in the November election, Rick Christie? I guess, you know, as it gets resolved, but even just the shadow of that?
Well, I think so, yeah. It depends on how the how those 1.4 or 5 million ex-felons register. You know, I think the assumption is that most of them will register as Democrats, but we don't know that for sure.
Right.
And right now, I think it's still in court. It's not going so much the state's way from what I believe at the moment. But right now, it's still in court, and it could be solved by then. You know, I think that Rosemary is right. One of the biggest arrows in the quiver of the Republicans is DeSantis himself, who is pretty darn popular right now because he's saying and doing a lot of things that are popular. Boy, you kind of have to wait for 2 or 3 years from now to see whether or not a lot of this stuff bears out that he's been talking about. But, you know, as I tell people, he had nowhere really to go but kind of up from Rick Scott. You know, all you had to do was say something nice about the environment and you're doing better than Rick Scott. You know, all you had to do was embrace the fact that teachers should be paid more and you're doing better than Rick Scott. You know, and so basically what you've got is a Republican governor who comes in, who is pretty conservative himself, very much aligned with President Trump on policies like, you know, e-verify and things of that nature. But on the other hand, you know, he's not as bad as Rick Scott, you know. So, so there you go. But I mean, he is taking a good amount of popular stands and everything.
But he has had some unpopular stance.
Well, don't get me wrong. Yeah.
I mean, he did those toll roads. He made it more difficult to amend the Constitution. Mm-hmm. So he made a good first impression, and he's done a lot of things right. But a lot of people have only heard about the things that he's done right and are focused there, and not so much on the second wave.
Yeah, he's been playing both ends against the middle, and so that he is soft and cuddly on the environment. For the most part. But look, he is a hard-line Republican.
Sure, and he will not be on the ballot in 2020.
He will not
However, the relationship, the close relationship that he has forged with the White House, to some degree, is on the ballot in 2020. We've seen a lot of freeing up of federal dollars for Everglades restoration, for instance. We've seen how the governor has gone and lobbied in the Oval Office and in the White House for FEMA reconstruction money and FEMA relief money for Hurricane Irma and Hurricane Michael.
You've hit the nail on the head there when it comes to popularity, political popularity. He's spending money, okay?
He's getting the money.
He's getting the money, and he's willing to spend it, you know? And that makes a big difference with a lot of people, you know? That's one of the big reasons why infrastructure and transportation used to be the thing in the U.S. Congress and everything. Everybody got their little pork that they needed and everything to keep themselves reelected. And so as long as he's willing to spend money, maybe not in areas that we think he should be spending it, for example, affordable housing, you know, but as long as he's willing to recommend spending money in certain areas, that's going to help him.
But here's another example of where he didn't spend money, and that is at the South Florida Water Management District. South Florida was encouraging the board to allow the tax rate to rise with the property values. They rolled back the rate yet again this year in the face of a 70-year-old flood system that has gates that are just 6 inches shy of failure. Yeah. So he gets the credit for finding the money, but those things that have really substantial impact down here, it's Teflon.
Yeah,
and I think where we can see that in 2020 in politics is going to be on the legislative races, right? Florida, its welcome card, its sign for the 49 other states to the New Jerseys and the New Yorks of the world and the Californias is come live in the sunshine with no income tax. The low tax effort, life less taxing in South Florida or in Florida for that matter. And so when you get these legislative initiatives to hold back tax increases because the value of the assets rising, the Florida legislature time and time again, Nancy, has seen that as a tax increase, not as just allowing the natural inflation of taxes happen.
Right. Absolutely. Again, he plays both ends against the middle. He presents a good look. I'm concerned that, you know, we wrote an editorial praising him for proposing full funding for the Sadowski Trust Fund.
The Affordable Housing Fund.
The Affordable Housing Fund. But now he needs to get out and push for that thing because he's gotten the credit. But he got the credit last year also. But the and he allowed the legislature to underfund. Yeah. Miami-Dade was due to get, what was it, $20 million, and we got two? We got two? Given the affordable housing crisis here, I think that's an abomination.
And those people aren't going to be wanting to move to Florida if there's poop in the streets like there has been in Fort Lauderdale, or poop on the beaches, as how many beach closures have we had?
Or water in the driveway for 90 days out of the year, those kinds of things. But again, DeSantis won't be on the ballot, of course, as the three of you know. But will his agenda be on the ballot in some way, shape, or form when it comes to more local or regional legislative races?
Yeah, I think a number of the state legislators and local guys are going to be trying to piggyback off of whatever, you know, he is proposing that will help them, you know. But I think it's up to, and those will be Republicans, but I think it's up to the Democrats to point out the things that Rosemary and Nancy are talking about. Yeah, he's doing a better job on the environment, but look at the fact that our water is not any better than it was before. He's recommending to the legislature that they not sweep the Sadowski Housing Trust funds. But just the other day, the Senate House Appropriations Chairman Travis Cummings, I believe, or Senate Appropriate, basically said, oh, yeah, we're going to sweep the trap. We're going to sweep the housing trust funds. You know, so it's like, and that we editorialized as well and everything. But is he, so if the Democrats have to say, yeah, that was nice of him to say, but when push came to shove, there was no push. You know, and they have to be willing to point that out, mm-hmm. you know, that he's talking a good game on some of this stuff, but he's not really following through. Yeah. Can I come back to just circle back to just how crucial Florida is as a state in the upcoming November in the general election and everything? And proof of that, part of the proof of that is the fact that our president is spending so much time here. And,
well,
he's a resident.
He's a resident now, Rick, of your county.
He's a homeboy.
I was getting to that. You know, also getting to the point that he changed his residency to here. Yeah. Now, not that New York really cares that much, to be honest with you, that he did that. But I think all of that and the time that he spends here, now we've just he's now going to be speaking at Turning Point USA. Their event up in Palm Beach County and everything. These are young conservatives and everything. And so basically his actions and everything, all of his actions show just how crucial he understands that Florida is to him winning the presidential race and how much Florida put him over the top last year. I mean, I'm sorry, in 2016 in winning because if he had lost Florida, he would have lost the race itself.
Yeah, President Trump likely to campaign pretty heavily with Governor DeSantis throughout the state in the months ahead, no doubt about it. Talking about the year ahead, 2020, with our Invading Sea panel of editorial page editors from the three major media organizations in South Florida. Rick Christie, you just heard him there, from the Palm Beach Post. Nancy Ankrum from our news partner, the Miami Herald. And Rosemary O'Hara with the South Florida Sun Sentinel. Lots more to come because it is going to be a long and busy year. Latin America and the Caribbean, certainly local stories here in South Florida. We're going to look at the Americas next in what may be some of the biggest stories of 2020 in the hemisphere. It's all coming up. We're back on the South Florida Roundup here on WLRN. Thanks again for listening and Happy New Year. Taking a look at what may be some of the bigger stories to dominate local and regional news in the year ahead. Our panel of editorial page editors still with us. Nancy Ankrum with our news partner, the Miami Herald. Rosemary O'Hara with the South Florida Sun Sentinel. And Rick Christie with the Palm Beach Post. Let's focus on the Caribbean and Latin America here. Local stories for all of us in South Florida, no doubt. And it's going to be a busy year for news flow out of that hemisphere. And I think what is first and foremost for many of us in South Florida is this month, in the next week or so, marking the 10th anniversary, the decade since the devastating, deadly earthquake in Haiti. And the destruction can still be felt here with the debate around temporary protected status and, of course, the political and economic turmoil that continues to rack the country 10 years later. Nancy, how does this country look 10 years after, and what does the year ahead look like for it?
Oh, I hope the year ahead is not more of the same.
Yeah,
I am convinced that Grand Bahama and Abaco will be up and running and fully recovered before Haiti is recovered from the earthquake a decade ago.
Yeah, it's less than a year after Hurricane Dorian in northern Bahamas, a decade and counting for Haiti and the earthquake.
Absolutely. People still in tents without homes. And, of course, there is not a functioning government. And the president is flexing his muscles in a way that is not helping in terms of taking over the electric companies and the gas shortages, mm-hmm. which we see, the results of which we see in the protests
in
that
the streets,
have been rocking.
Right. And the violence against citizens, right. the violence against politicians, the violence against journalists in the
absolutely.
Streets.
Absolutely. Absolutely. This remains, the earthquake aside, this remains a hugely troubled country. And you add in the earthquake and the fact that so little progress has been made in 10 years, I really don't know what it's going to take to make 2020 different.
Meantime, Rick Christie, for the United States and immigration policy, temporary protected status for those Haitians who sought refuge in the days and weeks and months after the earthquake. They have seen a lot of volatility in their status because of President Trump and his focus on immigration and debate and discussion around canceling that temporary protected status or having it expire. And even the State Department, his State Department coming in and writing reports over the past year or so about how the country has improved since the earthquake, and thus the temporary protected status may not be necessary any longer.
Yeah, I just think that for a lot of the reasons that that Nancy has already outlined, there's not a whole lot of sympathy in the current administration for Haiti or the Haitians who sought refuge here after the earthquake. And it's kind of, I don't know any other word than other than just ridiculous that they have not gone ahead and just and removed this TPS and allow these people to live here. They've been here for 10 years. They've established families. They've established careers. They have children who've grown up here who've never been to Haiti, you know, and everything, and who have been absorbed into our country, who are contributors to our country. And to say that, okay, boy, you know, they have to all go back to Haiti, it's just ridiculous to even be having that discussion, to be honest with you. And it's just, we're wasting, in my opinion, the administration is just wasting time with that.
Nancy. You know, it does call up the need, though, I think, to take a look at temporary protected status, because people do come. They become part of the community, and we all say, oh, don't send them back. Well, we don't want to send people back to troubled nations, whether it's political turmoil that these nations are going through or because of natural disasters. But I do think the name itself does have to mean something.
The temporary protected status.
Right. Yeah. It's supposed to be 18 months that you're allowed to stay here and then you go back. And it is a red flag of how broken our immigration system is, that we can't deal with this, because to deal with that means you have to deal with the other parts of our immigration system. So what we've seen in the last year or so is the Trump administration refused to give TPS to Bahama residents to come over here because, oh my gosh, they might want to stay. They don't want to give TPS protections to Venezuelans for the mass migration, because, you know, there's what's happening there. We're going to see mass migration out of Venezuela, and surprise, we already have.
Right, yeah.
And so this part of our immigration system is broken, mm-hmm. as are so many other parts. And yet, you know, the answer, the focus seems to be build the wall. Mm. But it doesn't seem to be on our role in the world. How do we have an immigration system that builds America, that builds our economy, that attracts the workers we need to support our aging, mature population in South Florida and elsewhere?
You say that with a wink in your eye there, Rosemary.
Speak for yourself.
That's right. That's right. Nancy's news this year is she is not aging at all. Yeah. But, you know, in all seriousness, the domestic debate sparked here, meaning, you know, the immigration mm-hmm. debate, it also has to have a piece of statecraft, right? So how is the United States engaging in these geographies in this hemisphere, not only with Haiti, but also with Venezuela, especially? And we saw in 2019, the Trump administration, Nancy, take a real significant strong arm and vocal tactic when it came to the Nicolas Maduro administration and Juan Guaido, the kind of constitutional leader. In the meantime, the man-made disaster in Venezuela, the economic collapse, and the human toll just continues to weigh on Venezuela as well as on the diaspora here in South Florida.
Right, exactly. I think that Venezuela is one place where this administration has gotten it right. However, there are only so many sanctions that can be levied against this. Juan Guaido, the National Assembly president who assumed the presidency as he could by constitution, has pretty much faded. There are negotiations, there are talks, but we really have not seen the movement, especially toward restoring democracy here, that we hoped we would, that we thought we would when Guaido made his move. Yeah. Earlier this year.
Let me also ask all of you about Cuba and American relations. 2019 had another shift in those relations with the Trump administration. 2020, we may continue to see those relations deteriorate. In fact, some think that 2020 may be a return back to the pre-2016 engagement, where the embassies in both countries officially close and they just become interest sections.
Hmm. Well, we've pretty much seen that already happen
right.
in Havana, given the sonic waves or whatever it was.
Mysterious attacks, yeah.
That were attacking our diplomats there. And certainly alarming. The Cubans denied that they had any involvement in that. But, you know, there's something that happened there. We certainly saw President Trump roll back the overtures of President Obama to try to open up. We've seen the flights are going to be going to fewer airports, fewer cities in Cuba. The cruise ships.
Cruise ships have stopped.
They're done.
Right. Oh.
So you understand that this government has been repressive. It's got political prisoners. It doesn't have a democracy and allow people a right of self-determination. On the other hand, you also have Cubans who want America. They want to have a relationship with us. Their lives are better if we're visiting them. Yes, some of that money absolutely goes to the military, but some of it also goes into the economy and to the pockets of everyday Cubans. I think the answer is not all one way or all the other, but to try to find some middle ground here with keeping what's right for the Cuban, helping them. But in the end, it is the Cuban people who have to determine for themselves, is this the government we want? And I don't know how it changes. Sometimes these things change in violent ways, but it is not for us to tell them. But I think having a relationship is important.
You know, the interesting thing also is that Cubans coming here have lost a lot of their special status and are not automatically accepted and are also being sent back. And so that is something that we are not used to seeing and that has caused quite a bit of upset. Among population.
It's a significant change in the immigration relationship between especially South Florida and Cuba. The wet foot, dry foot policy is no more. Deportations of Cubans who are in the United States has been stepped up as well, changing that dynamic in a pretty significant way, Rick.
Yeah, and that's something that I think just caught a lot of people by surprise because I think the Cuban community in South Florida has always had this sort of special status among immigrants in our state and in our country, to be honest with you. I think for me, you know, regarding it goes back to what kind of consistency we're going to have in our foreign policy when it comes to dealing with communist governments. You know, Cuba is definitely a communist government. It's repressive and has political prisoners. Well, so does China, you know.
Vietnam.
And so does Vietnam. Yeah. But we deal with them, you know, and everything. And our reason for dealing with them the way we have over the last decades is because we thought that having some type of trade and stuff with them would cause them, you know, cause democratic reforms and all of this other good stuff. Well, not really. It hasn't really happened. But here, a country 90 miles off our coast, you know, we have a different policy. And to me, that's what's really kind of frustrating. What is going to be we need a consistency in our foreign policy comes to dealing with these countries.
And I would say in the Americas, you know, we need to understand our stake in the Americas. With these countries that are struggling so, our national security, there is, and we see, for the first time, we saw Cubans who were migrating up through, you know, through Central America, mm-hmm. through Mexico. Yeah. We'd never seen that before. We'd never seen the volumes of people who were at the border. I mean, the president is right about that. When a Border Patrol agents do to have difficult times, when suddenly there's a group of 80 people, and God, they're seeing things I've never seen before. And the message there is that as our role in the hemisphere, we have a role to play in helping shore up government so that people can stay in their countries and have a decent life and stay home and with their families. They don't want to up and move and take this dangerous journey. I don't pretend to know what the policies are for El Salvador or Honduras or some of these countries, but I don't get the sense that we are doing as much as we can to help get stability in our region so that we don't see these mass migrations.
It's where foreign policy meets our neighborhoods here in South Florida with our broad community. Talking about the year ahead with our panel of editorial page editors from the major media organizations in South Florida. Our news partner, the Miami Herald, Nancy Ankrum, is with the Herald. Rick Christie with the Palm Beach Post. Rosemary O'Hara with the South Florida Sun Sentinel. Stick with us. Plenty more to come. What could be some of the bigger stories in the year ahead? Our conversation continues on the South Florida Roundup next. We're back on the South Florida Roundup here on WLRN. Happy New Year. Thanks for listening and supporting public radio. Here we are, the first program, the first Friday of 2020, talking about the year that could be in headlines with our panel of editorial page editors from South Florida's major newspapers. Nancy Ankrum with our partner, the Miami Herald, so Rosemary O'Hara with the South Florida Sun Sentinel, and Rick Christie with the Palm Beach Post. So you've got a lot on the agenda. We've talked about politics, talked about the hemisphere, certainly. There is no shortage of news, this being South Florida. But Rick, what's on your radar for the year ahead?
I think the biggest thing on my radar is workforce housing. Affordable housing, workforce housing, because we're at a crisis point, not just in our state, but in a number of states, particularly states with big cities around the country, where people can't afford to purchase a home or even rent a home. And this is something that needs to be addressed in the state of Florida and in different parts of the country, where you've even, like in places in California, where you've got like tent cities, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. Outside of places like San Jose and San Diego and San Francisco in California. And this has to be addressed. I mean, when we talk about how great our economy is, that we're at 3.5% unemployment, blah, blah, blah. Well, it doesn't mean anything if the jobs that we're creating are only paying 18 to 20 grand a year.
I think that's a key part here, right? Because the housing affordability debate tends to focus on housing, on the cost of housing, the cost of building, the cost of land, and rightfully so. But sometimes that debate about the job pay sometimes gets pushed down the agenda.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the issues that we have had for decades in this country is wage growth has been relatively stagnant for more than 30 years. And even with the small wage increases we've seen in the past year, 1%, 2%, that's nothing. It doesn't even make up the gap. And when you have average rents, like in Palm Beach County, somewhere close to $1,900 a month, you can't afford that, right. You know, making 20 grand a year. And this is an issue that has to be addressed in the state of Florida. I'll just speak about the state of Florida. Has to be addressed. And our lawmakers, our officials have to realize that money that we voted to dedicate that would be used for this has to be used for that purpose.
Yeah. Nancy, how about for you? What's front and center?
Front and center 2020 is voting. Access, engagement, and getting up and going out and actually doing it. Now, a lot needs to go into that. And you know what? It is not, for our editorial board, it is not a Republican issue. It is not a Democratic or an independent issue. It's an issue of being engaged. It's an issue of not walking around like a zombie, mm-hmm. and not caring or not thinking that your voice is unimportant.
Let me ask you about the youth vote, because after Parkland, we saw a great groundswell of interest from then folks who were too young to register. But as that kind of subset of generation has aged in, this can be to some degree for those students, not only literally the Parkland students, but for that generation, the first presidential election year.
Right. Absolutely. And what I am hoping is that momentum, that anger, that desire to play a role has continued, that they haven't aged out of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it becomes an issue. We always, you know, we talk about, yeah, you know, the candidates have to engage young people. They have to engage this demographic or that sector of society. And I hope to make clear that you have to engage yourself. You have to engage yourself also. So that's my 2020
voter
issue.
Responsibility.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It took a long time for so many people to actually secure the vote. Don't squander it.
Right. Mine would be the election. And sort of, if I could say something quickly about the national, state, and local. At the national level, I think that we are going to see climate play a role in Florida. I'm hearing signs of political action committees, of media campaigns, certainly the South Florida, the Invading Sea Collaboration I'm sitting here with, you know, is going to keep the issue of our future and ensuring Florida's future for generations on front and center, and I think it's going to play a major role. At the state level, we're going to see some constitutional amendments that, to your point, Rick, you know, on affordable housing and wage, you know, are we going to
see a minimum wage?
Yeah, we could see a minimum
recreational
wage.
Marijuana.
Right.
We could see an assault weapons ban.
Yes. Perhaps. If these amendments reach the ballot.
Right.
But those will be big issues for Florida. And then in Broward County, the big race that we have coming up is for our sheriffs. For the Broward County Sheriff.
Scott Israel, the former Broward Sheriff, who was in charge and dismissed after Parkland by the governor, whose dismissal was held up by the state Senate.
Right, yes.
And the current sheriff also
running. Right, Gregory Tony.
Yeah.
And there are other candidates in the race, but this is a two-man showdown.
Yeah.
And it's attracting big money, and it's going to be the race to watch in Broward.
What's at stake in that race? And I ask that because the sheriff's office in Dade County is going to be an elected race in elections to come, as determined by a constitutional amendment that was approved in the last election cycle. So how do those folks out of Broward County look at what's at stake in Broward County with that sheriff's race, do you think?
Well, for me, it makes most sense, as in most cities, that a mayor or a city commission can fire a police chief if they do a bad job. What Florida voters did last in 2018, whether they knew it or not, was require that every county have a sheriff.
Right.
And so be elected sheriff. So Miami-Dade now has to elect one, mm-hmm. even though it was doing just fine the way it was before. But the Sheriff's Association was pushing that. And in and something happened in the dismissal of Sheriff Israel that should alarm sheriffs throughout Florida. And that is, if one of your people does something bad, you can be held responsible and be removed from office. A bad signal was sent. And it's not the way that we should pick our voters. You know, voters aren't in a position really to pick the sheriff and who ends up being the most political, powerful politician locally. It ought to be a mayor or city council. But it is the system we have, and it's going to be a bruising election.
Yeah.
I think that is what's most at stake. That he was fired.
Sheriff Israel.
Sheriff Israel was fired for one incident. This was not the perfect sheriff, by any means. But I do agree that
his critics, though, pointed obviously the Parkland tragedy being a very significant incident. But they also point to the shooting at the Fort Lauderdale Hollywood International Airport prior to the Parkland tragedy.
Right. Absolutely. However, police chiefs, sheriffs around this state are riding herd over, you know, rogue, incompetent, bad officers. Mm-hmm. And are we going to remove them all? I think that they have turned a blind eye to those sorts of actions on police departments, of police departments. But this just happened to be, unfortunately, the right tragedy to allow a Republican majority Senate to get rid of a Democratic.
And in some ways, it was like what we've seen in Washington. I mean, even though we certainly have had our issues with former Sheriff Israel, and agree that there were mistakes made in Parkland and mistakes made at the airport, in removing him from office, Governor DeSantis failed to prove a single charge that was in terms of training, policy, staffing, you name it. He didn't prove a single charge. And yet the Senate had a hearing, and without a single bit of evidence, they upheld the suspension of a Democratic sheriff in Broward.
We will certainly be watching a big race on the local side with the Broward sheriffs. Obviously, a big presidential race, big legislative race, voter engagement, and to some degree, even the future of housing affordability on the ballot with those who will be elected. To all three of you, Happy New Year. Thanks for everything that you have done and will do in the year ahead. Health and happiness in 2020.
Same to you, Tom.
Thank you. And to you.
Rick Christie, Rosemary O'Hara, and Nancy Ankrum. That'll do it for the South Florida Roundup here. The program is produced by Alexander Gonzalez. Our engagement producer is Katie Lepre. Our director of radio operations is Peter Meritz. Director of radio programming, Jason Zabka. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening and supporting WLRN. The program made possible by Willie the Bee Man, Bee Removal Specialist.